This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. During World War II, hundreds of U.S. airplanes were lost along the military supply route in a remote area of the Himalayas. Flyers called it the hump. Now, for the first time in 6 years, India has quietly led a team back into the country, into that region's rough terrain to search for the troops' remains. Back in the U.S., families of lost veterans hold on to the memory of the missing. They have no idea how long they'll have to wait for their loved ones' return or the return of their remains. WNC's Jay Price is reporting on the recovery effort in India as part of the American Homefront Project. It's a collaborative effort by WNC and public radio stations in Seattle and Southern California. And Jay Price is back on the State of Things. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Tell us where the story begins, at least for the search for lost service members in India.
Well, it begins with an unusual person, a guy named Clayton Cools, who's a mountaineer. And in 2001, he was doing trekking, just adventure trekking, in northern Burma. And one of his guides said, hey, you know, how would you like to go see an airplane? You know, it's one of apparently an American aircraft that's been crashed and we know about it. And he said, well, why not? And he spent 2 weeks doing it. And as it turned out, he was looking for something else to do in life. He was kind of aging out of mountaineering. His knees were going. And he developed a very unusual technique. I mean, in some ways it's straightforward, but, you know, there are all these hundreds of aircraft. The ground is almost littered with them. They call it the aluminum trail now. And he discovered he could just go into villages in these areas, particularly in northeastern India, and just ask, you know, when you were out gathering medicinal plants or when you were out hunting or your grandfather was out hunting, where did you see a wreck? And he's now found 22 in several self-financed expeditions.
Well, tell us more about the hump and how these planes got there.
Well, there was a supply route that the Allies were using from India into China, and they called it the hump because they had to fly over the Himalayas. The charts weren't good. The equipment they used for navigation was rudimentary at best. The weather was terrible, 200-mile-an-hour downdraft sometimes, a lot of frozen wings, as the case may be. And a lot of them crashed, hundreds. There were 700 and some aircraft missing from that in that particular area, almost all of them that were flying that particular route.
Why are we still looking for so many now? That was decades ago.
Well, the last people, and this kind of gets at what motivates Clayton and what motivates a gentleman in Cary who's been helping him out. The last people who knew these missing flyers are dying off. They're almost gone now. Most of them, their younger siblings are in their 80s and 90s. And the last people who really deeply care are vanishing quickly.
Has there been a continuous effort to get these planes?
Well, there are more than 80,000 troops missing in action from the wars that the Defense Department hunts for folks, hunts for remains from World War II on up to the most recent conflicts, including the Cold War, for that matter. There's still some missing. Most of them from World War II, more than 70,000 from World War II. And they know where a lot of them are. They also have to undertake several kind of elaborate methods to find some of them. They use kind of archival things. They use linguists, kind of forensic librarians, basically. And they interview people on the ground and so forth. But, you know, they aren't hunting for every one of these people right now.
So this is complicated. I mean, you're talking about looking for a lot of people decades ago all across the globe, or at least Europe and the East. And this is very difficult terrain in the Himalayas. And this is further complicated by a border dispute between China and India. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest ongoing border dispute in the world and has been. It's been simmering since the 1950s. If you look on Google Maps for that area, all you see is dots. Google doesn't want to take sides on this one. You know, there's miles and miles and miles. This entire Indian state is just defined by dotted lines. China claims it. India has it. There's another part of the border where India claims it and China has control. So there's a lot of sensitivity, a lot of geopolitical sensitivity here. You're dealing with the world's three most populous countries, India, the U.S., and China. And they've got a lot bigger concerns when they're working on their diplomatic issues than these poor families.
All right. So tell us about Gary Zayats of Kerry.
Well, much in the way that Clayton, I kind of tend to think of them as parallels almost. Clayton Cools, the adventurer who does this kind of finding of things, he's wired to find things. He's got the skill set to do it. He knows how to handle logistics and deal with this terrible terrain. Gary is a computer guy. He basically is a support guy for IBM, does mainframe work. And he also happens to be very, very good at social media, very good. And his uncle is missing on one of these aircraft. In fact, the one that they're now working on, the recovery team from the U.S., Gary is really good at hunting down people via the internet, and which he's done for a lot of the people on the crew lists for the aircraft that Clayton has found. And Gary is also very good at figuring out ways to kind of rally them so that they can kind of pool their very limited power. They're almost powerless in the face of these three giant countries. And he's kind of helped them kind of figure out how to lobby the local politicians, how to get stories in local media. He also reached out to Indian media and reached out to even Indian officers, former military officers, by, you know, more than 100 of them. He's figured out that a lot of them are on LinkedIn, of all things, and has contacted dozens and dozens and dozens of them and got 60-some former Indian officers to kind of sign up in support of, hey, please let these recovery teams back in. It's the right thing to do.
And the Indians did that in September, but kind of on the hush-hush.
They did. No one has really explained why they decided to open things back up. They had let teams in 2008. One team was working on Gary's uncle's aircraft and booted it back out again in 2009. And Gary and the others have been kind of fighting to get it back in against all this political resistance from these three countries. And they quietly let it back in, but no one's explained why.
And is Gary optimistic? You did talk with him. You've interviewed him.
Yeah, we should play tape on that. And you could get it in his own words.
All right.
Is this really an end to this moratorium? Or is it just PR, we're going to do one crash site and maybe they'll go away and we won't do anything for a couple of years? All right. Well, that's unacceptable as far as I'm concerned.
That's Kerry resident Gary Zayats talking about a new U.S. military team that is searching for the remains of World War II service members in India. So what's the status at this moment of the recovery efforts?
Well, he has been told, I think, back channel that the team that has gone back in late September is now working on his uncle's aircraft again. That was the only aircraft they worked on in 2008, 2009. It takes months sometimes to do a recovery. It's essentially a full archaeological dig there. So, I mean, the clock is still ticking, though, especially for the other aircraft. Those families don't know when or if ever those aircraft will be excavated.
And these are immediate family members. Gary's talking about his uncle, but as you say, the clock is ticking. These are people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. Is there a sense that if it goes another generation distant, that the search will simply end?
No, I think they'll keep on, but... You know, the DOD, the Pentagon, has a very small number of teams that can actually do this work. They recover and identify maybe 100, 105, 106 people a year at most. Backlog of, if you want to count all 80,000 some odd that are missing, it's, you know, hundreds of years of work, if, you know, thousands. Probably.
Is this the kind of thing that nonprofits could do? You think about guys like Clayton Cools and others who want to go up into these areas, who have figured out ways to find it. Does it have to be a sort of a military operation?
No, it doesn't have to be, and the Pentagon has been talking a lot about privatizing at least some of the work. It's complicated. I think Clayton at this point, he's been financing all this himself, and it's fabulously expensive. I mean, $15,000, $20,000 for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks worth of work on a specific expedition. And he does have some sort of moral compunction. He feels an obligation. He's one of the few people who can pull this off, and he wants to do it. But he doesn't have money to do this constantly, and he wants DOD to fund expeditions for him. They also apparently have funded another private organization to try to do this. I don't think they've had any results at all. It's tricky stuff because you actually have to have not only a medic with you, but you have to have an explosive officer with you, someone who's good at defusing things, because even stuff from the Civil War can kill you still.
And you know, you talked about Clayton Cools going village to village asking, you know, when was the last time you saw a wreck? Does DOD have better information? They have pretty good information about where these planes might have gone down?
They've got some information about where they are. In fact, I think that they've been using some of Clayton's. He's got a website, mirecoveries.com, and you can look on it, and he's got the exact coordinates mm-hmm. from his GPS. He posts a full report on each of the things he's found. They could use his pretty easily. I don't know that they really need to look for a whole lot more. They probably need to spend their efforts on recovery if they want to be effective.
WNC military reporter Jay Price, thank you very much, Jay.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
He reported on the recovery effort in India as part of WNC's American Homefront Project, and you can find his full report at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new book looks at the rise of the terrorist group ISIS and its founder, and you will hear more on that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.